Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to season four of Venus Rising. I'm your host, Callie Fell. Today, I have the pleasure of having freelance writer and journalist Megan Murphy on the show. Megan has a master's degree in the Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Study at Simon Fraser University. And Megan began her radio career in 2007 in a trailer in the middle of a sheep field. She's been writing about feminism since 2010 and is known for going against the grain. She was the first to publish a critique of Slut Walk back in 2011 and was one of the only popular feminist bloggers to publicly articulate both a radical feminist and sociologist position against the sex industry. Megan's critiques of third wave feminism, burlesque, self-objectification and selfies, gender identity politics, and choice feminism have brought both acclaim and attacks, but most of all, recognition of a writer who isn't afraid to say something different, despite what progressive and mainstream media deem to be the party line, which is definitely our kind of girl. She has spoken around the world about the issue of gender identity legislation and women's rights, including the Canadian Senate and Scottish Parliament. And she was also featured in our documentary last year, Transmission, What's the Rush to Reassign Gender? Most recently, Megan is the founder and editor of Feminist Current, one of my favorite feminist websites, where you can find a unique perspective on gender, women's rights, and many other issues that are often under or misrepresented by mainstream progressive and feminist media sources. Currently, Megan is working on a book project of her own, which takes a critical look at third wave feminism. Megan, welcome to the show. It's good to talk to you again.
Hi, thanks for having me. So whenever people read that bio, I'm like, geez.
No, it's great. To me, it's like, you are well-educated, you know what you're talking about, and you're not afraid to talk about what you're talking about. So I think it just gives you all the more street cred.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to talk with you.
Yeah. So since we've chatted since Transmission, we have released another documentary film, The Detransition Diaries, Saving Our Sisters. But a lot more has happened in the world. COVID's come and gone so far. Now we have monkeypox. But what have you been up to besides writing a book?
Well, I mean, I hardly have time to work on the book, to be honest. I have too much going for my own good, which is good and bad. I mean, it's all things I want to be doing, but I'm running Feminist Current. I'm running the Feminist Current podcast, producing and hosting that. About maybe a year and a half ago, I started a YouTube show and another podcast called The Same Drugs. So that's been a lot of work. I'm writing on Substack as much as I can. I'd like to be doing that more, but I only have a limited amount of time in the day. And I left Canada to move to Mexico. So that's been great. And yeah, I mean, I just am trying to do as much as I possibly can. There's so much going on. It's endless, which is, you know, maybe not a great thing. There's a lot to fight on. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy with my work. I'm trying to do more constantly. I'm sure we all are.
Yeah. Keep your head above water. Yeah. And you know, yeah, like you said, there's not a lack of material to kind of fight against right now. Tell me more about your new, channel about, I've already forgotten what you called it, but
The Same Drugs.
Yeah. What is that?
Yeah. I mean, after I was banned from Twitter in 2018, I realized I needed to branch out to other channels to reach my audience and to build new audiences. I had been pretty heavily focused for many years working on Feminist Current, almost full time, as well as doing freelance work. And yeah, my main, because I'm independent, I was totally dependent on social media. to reach my audience. And so being banned from a platform like Twitter, which I was heavily dependent on in terms of, you know, where I was focused on social media wise and speaking to my audience and sharing my work, that was a pretty big blow. So I moved to YouTube and tried to make time for that. There was also just a number of different things I wanted to talk about. There was different people that I wanted to talk to. I was sort of questioning my own political and ideological leanings and limits. And Feminist Current, I think, is such an important resource. But my aim with that podcast is to speak to and highlight and give voice to women and women's work and what women have been doing around the world in terms of fighting for women's rights, in terms of feminist activism. And so it made sense to me to start a separate channel to explore different areas I was interested in, including free speech. That's mm-hmm. a big one. Civil liberties, constitutional rights. You know, I started to question a lot of feminism's ideological limits, and I wanted to work beyond the left-right binary and work outside of feminism. You know, you want to reach as many people as possible and learn from as many people as possible. So that's a big reason why I wanted to start the Same Drugs also. So it's been great for me. I've learned a lot.
That's awesome. Well, we'll definitely, if you're listening, check her out on YouTube and Feminist Current. And yeah, I want to actually talk to you about your recent article that you wrote for Feminist Current this week regarding the famous shop teacher with those cartoonish breasts that everyone's kind of talking about. Can you just talk about that? Why is this being allowed now? And what's the tie here? I mean, I remember as a young girl in high school, like, I would get in trouble. I have freakishly long arms, and none of my skirts or shorts in the spring were ever long enough, right? Like barely short. And I got harassed, and, you know, other girls got sent home because their clothes were just a little too short. And here we have this man showing up in these like fake breasts with his nipples protruding. And I can't wrap my hand around that. And so could you maybe fill our listeners into that and why that's so detrimental to our kids and to women?
Yeah. I mean, so this past week, it was reported by Redux, which is a really great feminist website, that this man named Kayla Lemieux in Ontario had been coming to class. He's a teacher at an Oakville school, Oakville Trafalgar High School. He'd been coming to class in these like ridiculous, cartoony prosthetic breasts that were actually, I'm not into anime, so I didn't know this until after the fact, but they're styled after some version of anime porn. You know, it's clearly fetish gear. And when these photos, which were released by some students in his class, went viral, people were obviously shocked and appalled. And the school and the school board defended this guy. I think a Canadian news media outlet, Rebel News, spoke to the director of education for the Halton District School Board. And this guy, his name is Curtis Ennis, his response was that the school board is committed to supporting all of our teachers and staff and students in an environment that upholds their dignity, their gender identity, and their gender expression. And, you know, essentially what this comes down to, it's so frustrating and maddening because essentially this all comes back to Canada's gender identity legislation that was passed in 2017. It was Bill C-16 that was passed. And what it did was to add gender identity and gender expression to the list of prohibited grounds of discrimination in the Canadian Human Rights Act and the Criminal Code. So now we're in this place where we can't oppose anyone who claims, you know, this guy is claiming he's a woman and this is his gender identity. And therefore, the school board is defending him on the basis that it would be discrimination not to defend his right to dress like this in the classroom. And it's ridiculous. I mean, it looks like a joke. And maybe it is a joke. Maybe this guy is trolling us all and just testing the law. Maybe he's looking for a payout because he can, you know, if the school did fire him or say you can't dress like this in the classroom, he could claim discrimination and take them through the human rights tribunal and get a payout. But, you know, back in 2016, when this bill was on the table, I fought this. Like I wrote about it and I fought to write about it. Nobody would publish me. And I had been working as a journalist and doing freelance writing in Canada and a bit in the US and a bit in the UK at that time for a few years. And nobody would publish a feminist critique of Bill C-16 and of gender identity ideology. Men like Jordan Peterson were allowed to speak about this and gained a lot of attention and made a lot of money speaking about this alone. They, you know, these guys, well, I'll just speak for Jordan Peterson. You know, he refused to acknowledge that feminists were fighting this and critical of this. He refused to work with feminists. He refused to align himself with women who were fighting with this. He wanted to appear as though he were the lone soldier. And, you know, he's anti-feminist, which is totally fine. Like, I have my major critiques of feminism, too. I don't need anybody to get on board with feminism. But the fact that because he had an ideological and political opposition to feminism, that he refused to support women in their fight against gender identity, despite the fact that it affects us the most. You know, this is a fight, really, when it comes down to it, about women's rights and the impact of gender identity legislation on women and girls, on the safety of women and girls, and on the rights of women and girls. And, you know, feminists were totally ignored. I went and testified against this bill at the Senate in 2017. And that was, I'm really grateful for that opportunity, which was given to me by a conservative senator in Canada, a man. And, you know, there really was very little public debate about this at the time. It was limited by the Canadian media, who refused to cover the bill and the issue in a fair and true way. The CBC and most other Canadian media outlets pretended as though there was wide public support for the bill, despite the fact that most of the Canadian public had no idea that this bill existed or what it even meant or what gender identity even is. And they pretended as though the only opposition to the bill was coming from religious right bigots who were also opposed to lesbians and gay men. And that may have been true in some places, but that was not accurate by any means. And they knew it. Like, I had published articles for the CBC many times at that point. I had done interviews on the CBC, had been on the CBC. I pitched to the CBC about this issue and they refused to publish me. They intentionally skewed the debate and the issue. And so Bill C-16 passed with little pushback. I mean, the other problem was that, honestly, a lot of people were too scared to speak out, which I understand, but it's still frustrating because I do know that, you know, there were women and feminists in Canada who knew this was happening and failed to organize. So a few of us did push back, but we had to do it largely on our own. And we're punished viciously for it. And now we're seeing the repercussions, which are horrible. Yeah. Like, I don't know how we're going to come back from this. I hope that when people see how far this has gone, there will be a major push in Canada to repeal Bill C-16 and this legislation. But, you know, once a bill becomes a law, it's much harder to undo. It's much easier to fight the bill before it's passed in the first place. Mm-hmm. And we failed in that regard. And you know, in other countries, they have been successful in fighting these bills, including in the UK. So I have big respect for those women for really organizing and really fighting tooth and nail and getting out on the street and organizing meetings and talking to MPs and writing letters and organizing campaigns. That was super impressive. And, you know, coulda, shoulda, woulda. I wish we'd done that in Canada.
Well, if anything, this is just like, besides a big I told you so, serves as like kind of a warning signal for other countries, like know the laws that are being passed. I know, and I know it can be. I mean, when Jennifer and I went to Wyoming for surrogacy, some surrogacy laws that they were trying to push as far as birth certificates, you know, in a state like Wyoming, the legislators there were completely overwhelmed because they have, you know, a session and they have to know all about all these different bills that may or may not be passed. And they're kind of pushed together and they kind of, you know, unfortunately, they can't read every single letter of every single law before it's voted on. And I know that that's hard for people, but like now we're seeing this. I mean, that could be very well become the classrooms across your country. What does this mean for, do you follow, you know, what's happening in the United States? And do you think the United States is kind of headed the same way as Canada? Or, you know, what do you have to say about that?
I mean, it seemed like, in a lot of ways, the U.S. was headed in that direction. But I mean, the U.S. is interesting because there's a little cohesion across states. In Canada, what happens at the federal level pretty much happens across the provinces. As soon as Bill C-16 passed, all the policies changed in every single province across Canada, almost unofficially. That bill passed, and then it was like, men are allowed to access women's change rooms. That's it. In community centers, in public spaces, in schools. But in the US, because you guys have blue states and red states, it's very, you know, in the blue states, it seems as though this is like a done deal and people can just change their birth certificates and driver's license and IDs to an entirely different sex that isn't actually their sex. And they're, you know, transing kids and, you know, it's very difficult for parents and therapists, for example, to challenge a child's trans identity. But in red states, it seems like they're pushing back really hard and they're really opposed to this destroying of kids' lives. You know, like we're talking about surgeries and hormone treatments that will ruin their bodies for their entire lives and have enormous repercussions, you know, physically, as well as psychologically, as well as in terms of their ability to be in like a happy relationship and to have a family. Like, it's really disgusting. So I have more hope for places like the US than for Canada, because there's a lot more pushback in various places. So, but I mean, you know, I'm bad at making predictions, so we'll see.
I don't know. So, you kind of called it back.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, like, unfortunately, right now, the Democrats are in power and we have Biden pretending as though men are women. Yeah. He's the president of the U.S. pretending that a man is a woman in public, which is like pretty crazy.
It's really crazy. Sometimes I just like, you know, we fight this and we have the films and like I go about my day to day and then I'm like, sometimes I'm just sitting there and it just like kind of hits me like, wow, we've become so fooled that we think men are women and women can be men. Like, we have really, how did this happen? Like, it kind of just crept in. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like we're living in some kind of sci-fi novel, right?
Where parents have no rights anymore. And, you know, for their kiddos or, you know, with schools, Posey Parker talked about the teenager who was suicidal and was changing their names and, you know, without the parents even knowing. And I wanted to say though, real quick, before I get off topic about the blue and the red states, I'm really excited for what Matt Walsh is doing. I've been following him pretty heavily in the last few days with his big expose on Vanderbilt, which is Nashville, which is traditionally, I believe, a red state. And now it gives me hope a little bit that like, yes, like, okay, we're starting to unveil the harms here and we need to hold these institutions and medical facilities accountable for what they're doing to kiddos.
Yeah. And I think one thing that he uncovered that's really important was that I can't remember the name of the organization. You just said it. I mean, in any case,
Vanderbilt.
Yeah, Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt University Medical Center.
I mean, they're acknowledging that there's a huge profit incentive to transition kids. They, uncovered the fact that people were saying, like, if you trans a kid, you basically have a lifelong customer.
Yeah.
Which I know other women have said before Matt Walsh made this discovery, but it's great to have that on video. You know, right. There are plenty of women who've said, these are customers for life. Now right. They're going to be dependent on these drugs. So it's a huge profit for big pharma. They're going to have continual surgeries. Like, transitioning is not just you get a surgery and that's done. It's a ton of surgeries. Like, you have to go back and back and back. Often there's complications, which you need to deal with over and over and over. It's surgery after surgery after surgery after surgery. There's no way to make a man into a woman. These surgeons are liars. These people are all liars to say, you can transition, become a woman. You can transition to become a botched human being. That's what they're doing.
Right. And to just young kids, and it's messing their fertility up, like you said. And I've been talking to quite a few detransitioners, and those folks are medicalized for life too, unless they completely go off of the medications that they're on. But oftentimes they can't, because now they have, health issues, and now they're going to be medicated for their high blood pressure or for something else that, being on testosterone has caused. So really, even detransitioners, even if they say, oh, this was a mistake, they're still medicalized for life. They're still patients.
It's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. You talk a lot about your critique of feminism. So I'm going to kind of give you a big question. You can take with it, go wherever you want with it. But one, why is the trans agenda so harmful to women? Like, why do I want my women listeners to really understand this? And then what about, you have a critique of like the sex industry, burlesque. Why can't, pushback in the surrogacy world, well, a woman can consent. And if she consents to sex work, if she consents to surrogacy, it's her right. What's your pushback there? And so both of those things.
I mean, one of the major issues with gender identity is that you can't have gender identity and have women's sex-based rights, because you can't, women's rights are about protecting women from discrimination based on the fact that they're female. And if there's no such thing as female and there's no such thing as the woman, there's no legal precedent to defend. You can't protect women's spaces and also say a man can identify as a woman and therefore have access to these spaces. You can't protect Title IX, for example. You can't protect women's sports if you're saying men can be women and therefore men can compete in sport against females. You can't protect a women's transition house, a women's shelter, a change room. You can't protect women in prison, which are among the most marginalized women in the entire world, certainly within Canada and North America in any case. And they're being forced to share prison cells with dangerous, violent male offenders. And they truly have no voice and no rights. They truly can't speak up on their behalf. They're in jail. And, this is what I argued early on, is this was going to nullify women's rights. And that's what happened. Beyond that, transgenderism, the idea of a trans woman, I think makes a mockery of women. I mean, if we look at this guy, this shop teacher, Kayla Lemieux, I don't know what his original name was. This is a joke. This is not what a woman is. This is a cartoon. This is a porny fetish. Women are not fetishes. What most people don't talk about and acknowledge is that most adult male trans women have a fetish. It's autogynephilia. Ken Zucker has done research on this. And there's another Canadian sex researcher as well who published on this before Ken Zucker. And unfortunately, I forget his name. But in any case, this is about men getting turned on by the idea of themselves as women and by dressing as women in public. This isn't the same thing as being gay or lesbian.
Right.
People can have their fetishes. Like, if men want to do this in the privacy of their own homes, and if men want to wear women's clothing out in public, they can do that if they like. It's obviously not professional to dress in this way in the classroom. you know, work is a different situation. There are usually dress codes at work. And, you know, but to make this a legal issue and a human rights issue and to force people to call these men she is above and beyond, you know, it's mm-hmm. mass gaslighting. And it means that if a man walks into a change room where there are women and girls, if he's naked in a change room with his penis out in a change room with women and girls, they can't say anything. They have to just go along. I'm a woman. He can say, I'm a woman, and they have to go along with it and pretend that penis is somehow a female penis. It's crazy, and it's disgusting, and it's really dangerous. It's breaking down women and girls' boundaries. It's already hard enough to teach girls about boundaries right. and to teach girls, you know, because kids learn to bow to adult authority. So if a man says, I'm a woman, you know, don't discriminate against me, most kids aren't going to be confident enough to say no, right. although maybe some are. But, you know, girls sadly are molested all the time.
Right.
You know, girls start to be sexually harassed by adult men when they're really young. And parents do as much as they can to protect these girls. And by teaching them that if they see a man in these private women-only spaces, they can't say anything and they have to just accept whatever he says. That's a dangerous breaking down of boundaries. Mm-hmm. You know, it's teaching girls the opposite of what they need to be taught, which is that they can say no to any right. man, right. any man they feel uncomfortable around.
Well, and they might also, because of what we're telling them and what they're seeing online and in school, they might even say, oh, this woman did this to me or whatever. And then that right. brings up its own set of problems as well. Like, you're confusing individuals. But yeah, I worry about that with my little, we just had a daughter, and I just worry about that. I just want to teach her to be so strong and to be able to say no and to identify truth.
And to be able to speak the truth, yeah.
Yeah.
And not have to question what they know to be true. We all know who men and women are. We know what a man and a woman is. It's ridiculous to pretend otherwise.
Yeah. Why don't you think we see this outrage? I know I asked you like a double question and now I'm cutting you off to ask you another. So okay. they're throwing them ahead. But we don't see this outrage from men saying, oh my goodness, women are coming in our locker rooms and they want to be in prison with us. There's really no parallel concern. And I think that's an important thing to bring up as well.
I mean, women aren't a danger to men. Women right. have never been a danger to men. It's sad, but true. I don't like to position all men as dangerous predators because they're not.
Right.
And there are lots of men who are very angry about what's going on and do want to protect women and girls and protect women and girls' spaces and have fought. Mm-hmm. for and alongside women. And I really appreciate that. And, you know, they're doing it because they care about the issue, not because they're, you know, trying to do us a favor. I mean, they also are trying to do us a favor, but I just mean that they truly do care.
Right.
But, you know, the reality is that the people who rape, most of the people who murder, most of the people who sexually harass and most of the people who molest kids are men. Mm-hmm. And it is already very difficult for kids and women to protect themselves against these kinds of predators because men are stronger than women and obviously stronger than kids. We can be overpowered physically quite easily. Even women who are strong, you know, women who have been trained in self-defense, who box, who work out, those women are still going to be at a disadvantage if a man wants to overpower them. So, you know, it's that's the reality. We can't socialize our way out of that. This is biology. This is the material reality. This is the physical reality of the world. And that's why we have spaces that are single sex spaces. That's why we have separate change rooms. That's why we why women and men compete separately in sport. That's why there are female prisons and male prisons. That's why there's women's shelters and men's shelters, because everyone knows that it's dangerous to put women and men together in those kinds of spaces, especially the kinds of spaces where women and girls are vulnerable.
Okay, so back to my original question, which let me just say before I go on, though, I appreciate you bringing that up. Not many guests I've talked to articulate that as well, as far as what it does to little ones, especially girls and their boundaries. So I appreciate that. I hope every listener was tuning in and really focused during that. But back to my question, as a feminist and also critical of certain feminist views, for the people who say a woman should be able to work in the sex industry, that is her right, that's, you know, what's your hang up there?
I mean, women can choose to do whatever they like. I mean, as long as it's not harming other people. The choice, talking about this issue of, you know, prostitution, pornography, strip clubs, in the context of a woman's choice, I think, is a total derail. And that's a part of the reason why I'm so frustrated with the mainstream feminist or third wave feminist analysis of the sex trade and of objectification in general. You know, for most women in the world, the vast, vast, vast majority of women in the world, prostitution is not a choice, or it's a choice they make under duress. You know, most women in prostitution are poor and have no other choice. Either they've been groomed into prostitution, they were molested as kids, then they were trafficked into the cities. You know, in Canada, there's a big problem with Indigenous girls being trafficked from the reserves down into the downtown east side. And they've come from community where abuse is rife. And many of them sadly have been sexually abused and molested from the time that they were kids or even prostituted on the reserve. So this is normal for them. And then they're predated on by these adult men who pimp them out in Vancouver. I mean, this happens all over Canada. This happens in Ontario as well. And, you know, I don't care how many women come out and say, oh, I choose this, I love it. Most women don't want to fuck strange men. Sorry to swear, I shouldn't have sworn. Most women do not want to spend their lives being penetrated or sexually servicing strange men that they don't know.
Right.
And, you know, most of the women in the industry are addicted and are struggling with mental health issues. And it's all connected, you know, like it's not, there's no one route. It's like there's sexual abuse and sexual molestation, which leads to mental health issues, which leads to addiction. And the addiction is treating the mental health issues, which are rooted in trauma. You know, Gabor Mate, I don't know if you're familiar with him, has done really good work in this regard. He worked as a doctor in the downtown east side for many, many years and wrote about that, and wrote that pretty much all of the women that he saw and worked with and treated on the downtown east side had a history of sexual abuse. And this is a big part of the reason why they were addicted and why they then end up in prostitution.
Right.
You know, if women want to choose prostitution, they can go ahead and do that. But the amount of women who truly enjoy and want to be prostitutes is so small that it would never feed the demand from men around the world who want to pay for sex, to buy girls, to buy women, so that, you know, they can act without accountability, so that they can behave in abusive ways, so that they can satisfy their desires and so-called needs at the expense of someone else and not really think about it and not really have to deal with the consequences of that, because these aren't women they're in relationships with. These aren't women who have connections to their communities. And that's why trafficking exists. That's why women are forced. That's why women are exploited. And it's a huge problem. This is something women suffer. Millions and millions of women and girls around the world suffer. And to talk about it as though this is a choice or potentially empowering, I think is either disgusting and callous and sociopathic or delusional. You know, you have so much privilege that you've never, you know, I know women who've been in prostitution on the downtown east side or, you know, in similar situations. And I know how they got there and I know what happened to them when they were there. You've so much privilege to be able to ignore the realities of swaths of women, to pretend that what you see on TV or in a movie that glorifies prostitution is this sexy, lucrative thing where women are, you know, making tons of cash and feeling empowered doing it. That's an enormously privileged position to have. And then for you to speak as though this is the reality, I think is so unethical.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of like, strangely not pleasant parallels a little bit, right? Like between this and the gender identity issue, like a lot of these kids, I'm just like thinking back about in our film, when we interviewed some of the pediatricians, that these kids who have gender dysphoria, they have a lot of other messy things going on as well. They have maybe been abused, especially young girls who have been abused, and they know that they were abused by a man who wanted a young girl. So they don't want to be a girl anymore. They want to be a boy. It's not because they're confused about what body they have. It's because they've been subjected to trauma, or their parents are going through a yucky divorce, which is also trauma, or, you know, and so we're seeing, you know, when you were saying that, just kind of thinking of the parallels between the two. And
yeah, I think for a lot of girls, I mean, we've heard this from detransitioners. We've heard this in the stories of young women who transition. And we know this to be true as women, based on our own experiences growing up and going through puberty as girls, that, you know, women, girls start to be sexualized by adult men when they start going through puberty often, you know, like 11, mm-hmm. 12, 13. And if you are being sexually harassed or you're being molested on that basis, that adult men are sexualizing your body, which is, you know, changing into a woman's body, I think it's totally unsurprising that you'd want to get rid of that objectified female body, that woman's body that, you know, you could blame for this trauma. And, you know, I think that, yeah, like going through puberty is really difficult for all kids, but it's particularly difficult in a particular way for girls. There are all these things are happening to your body that are out of your control and that maybe you don't really want to be happening to your body. And then on top of that, there's these traumatic repercussions. It's really no surprise that a girl would think, oh, I'll have more power as a boy. I can be more confident as a boy. Men won't look at me like this or treat me like this as a boy. You know, I remember being a girl and not wanting to have anything to do with girl things and wanting to be like the boys. And, you know, I didn't want to wear girly clothes. I wanted to roughhouse. I thought boys were like tougher and cooler and got to have more adventures and have more fun.
Mm-hmm. I remember my mom actually framed it and put it out when I graduated from high school, but I wanted to play basketball at recess and the boys wouldn't let me play because I wasn't a boy. And I wrote like a 2-page essay as a fifth grader about why girls should be included in basketball and submitted it to my teacher. It didn't change anything, but yeah. Like, I think that was the start of all of this for me.
Oh yeah. I mean, you sound like me when I was a kid. Like I was banging on about sexism in the classroom in grade 5 and 6 and 7.
Right.
And speaking out about sexual objectification and sexual harassment, because around that time is also when boys began to like look at girls' bodies and talk about girls' bodies and judge and rate girls' bodies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I spoke up about that. And I mean, at the time though, I never literally thought I was a boy or literally wanted to
be
like a tom girl. I wanted to be like a cool, tough girl who wasn't feminine. Right.
I just wanted to be included as who I was. And I didn't understand why. Because of my chromosomes, I could or could not participate in something. Yeah. Yeah. So, but do you think it's interesting? Because I think a lot of people who aren't staying current on this find it interesting that in the transgender ideology, we have older men who are wanting to be women primarily, and then younger girls who are wanting to be boys. And I just, do you have anything to say on that? Why we see this huge difference?
I mean, I think what happened is that transgenderism and trans activism began with adult men with fetishes who wanted to be women. And, you know, these are narcissists. I mean, like, these are men who want to be looked at and want attention and want to dominate all conversations. But in this case, they're dominating conversations around what a woman is and women's spaces and women's rights. You know, these are men who are being celebrated as women, you know, breaking the glass ceiling by Forbes.
Oh my gosh, that made me so mad.
Yeah, it's like, and you know, like, they're being celebrated as the first women in all these positions of power in government, right? And they're men.
Right.
And, you know, like, I think that these men wanted to be legitimized. And that's sort of part of where this drive to normalize transgenderism began. And in order to normalize transgenderism and to make transgenderism a part of the LGBT movement, so, you know, it's a fight for the human rights of these marginalized identities, these marginalized people who've traditionally been discriminated against, gays and lesbians I'm talking about, they had to glom onto this born this way narrative because that really worked for the gay rights struggle. I don't necessarily like that narrative because I feel like you should be able to love who you love and partner with who you want to partner with, you know, as adults, whether you were born that way or not. Mm-hmm. But in order to glom onto this narrative and to legitimize their own fetishes and their own desires and how they wanted to operate in real life, they had to create this idea of trans kids. You know, kids are born trans, just like kids are born gay, and we can't discriminate against them. And then that ideology started to be pushed in schools and by institutions, and kids were told that maybe if you're a boy and you like dresses, and maybe if you're a girl and you don't like girl things, or girl clothes, or playing with girl dolls, you were actually the opposite sex. And that was who you really were. You were born in the wrong body, and you had to just correct your body so that you fit, you know, the real you.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that, yeah, like, I think that the reasons why men transition are very, very, very different from the reasons why girls are transitioning. And we talked a bit about that earlier. Right. I think a lot of girls are transitioning because of that objectification and harassment and sometimes sexual abuse that they're experiencing, as well as, you know, they're lesbians. So again, they feel like they don't fit in, you know, like, I'm not like the other girls. Like, I don't like girl things, and I want to date girls, or like, I like girls. Right. I'm attracted to girls. And it's become cooler to be trans or non-binary or queer than to be a lesbian. I mean, I don't think being a lesbian was ever really very cool, but now the trend for young women, like, you know, I think that it's cooler and more impressive in queer circles. This is what I'm told by people who are involved in queer circles, to be a trans boy, to be non-binary, than it is to just be a, you know, plain old, boring, like, old fashioned second wave lesbian.
Well, we're getting close to running out of time. And again, wonderful, articulate way to describe what's going on and what has been going on. I just want to briefly, I know you said you haven't had much time to work on it, but wanted to know a little bit more about the book that you're working on. And then when, I want to plug it a little bit for you, when can people expect it? Maybe don't even know. And then where can they find it once it's done?
Hopefully sometime. I mean, the book is a long story because I actually, a publisher in Vancouver, Greystone, asked me to submit a book proposal so many years ago, like, I think in like 2016 or something like that. So when I started working on the book, it was just when the gender identity stuff was starting to happen. And they dropped me after we'd gone through a number of rounds of edits and we're getting close to publication, they dropped me in 2018, around the same time I was banned from Twitter. Mm-hmm. And then things got crazy. I was doing talks all around the world. I had no time to revisit or work on the book. I was doing a lot of media stuff because of the Twitter banning and because of these talks that I was doing all around the world that were being, you know, protested by hundreds of people.
Crazy. Yeah.
And so by the time I sort of got back to looking at the book again, I changed my mind about so many things. And I was like, I sort of almost want to write a different book. So I'm in the process of essentially rewriting, which is super time consuming, and I have no time at all. So I have a, you know, a publisher who's been trying to work with me. I say trying, like she's been doing her very best, who wants to publish the book, but I'm not happy with the manuscript. So I'm trying to rewrite it. And for anyone who's written a manuscript in a book, I'm sure they know like how exhausting and brutal that work is. So I'm, you know, when I get to it is when it's going to be done. So okay. I'm keep trying to be like, I need to put aside, like I need to stop working on other things for like a month and just focus on that. But I'm apparently unable to stop because I'm like, stop scheduling interviews, not with you,
sorry, but
interviews. No, for my own podcast. Right. Like I have to sort of pause my own work for a bit, essentially, but I can't stop because there's so many things I want to talk about.
Well, we're writing a book. Jennifer and I are in the process right now. So we have your pain. We have a deadline now. So we do have to set aside time. And you keep talking, and I know we talked about this in the intro about how you were canceled on Twitter. I just want to let people know that we're not going into that on this podcast because I'm going to make you go to YouTube and watch Transmission, What's the Rush to Reassign Gender? Because Megan talks about it there. And I know she's talked about it at length. So you can also find it on her websites. And I just encourage everyone to go on and you can subscribe. Right to Feminist Current, you have like a
subscribe to Feminist Current. Yeah. We have the link to subscribe pinned on Twitter. We're at Feminist Current on Twitter, so that's an easy place to subscribe to keep up with what we're doing. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel. So if you look up Megan Murphy or The Same Drugs on YouTube, you can find the channel there. You can obviously subscribe to both podcasts. Everywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify. My Substack is Megan Murphy. It's also called The Same Drugs. My primary social media place now is Instagram, and I have a public page on Facebook too, so people can follow my work there. That's Megan Murphy. On Instagram, it's Megan Emily Murphy. And yep, that's all I can think of.
And we'll try to include all of those different links and places in the description of this podcast. So you'll be able to see that in the little description box. But don't despair, even though our time has come to an end. You can go on. I encourage you to go on and read so much more by Megan. She does a great job articulating this. And I also have an email for you. Can I share that? Or would you rather?
There's the same drugs at gmail.com.
Okay.
And then there's Megan at feministcurrent.com.
That's where I have there. So if you need to contact her, you can write her there as well. But don't contact her right now. She needs to finish her book.
No more emails.
Anyway, Megan, thank you so much for joining us and answering some really hard questions. And for all of the work that you do, you have a reader here. I'm always watching what you're doing and reading what you're writing. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you making the time to talk with me. And I appreciate you and the work that you and Jennifer are doing.
Yeah, thank you. All right.
Okay.
Bye. To all of our listeners, thanks for tuning in. Our goal, as ever, is to create conversation, facilitate discussion, and get you all to think beyond the masses. So thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.